Mr. James Craig, Reel 5. Now, we're talking about when you left the Royal Oak, going back to that, in July 1939. So what happened next then?
Well, from paying the Royal Oak off, we returned to the naval barracks at Plymouth. Now,
That's Drake, is it?
Yeah, HMS Drake. Now, none of the sailors actually liked going into HMS Drake because, you know, it was
why?
Far too strict. Well, it wasn't that it was far too strict. There were never-ending kit musters, work parties, and, you know, nothing very exciting, really. It was not like being a sailor. You weren't a sailor anymore. Nobody liked being ashore. So the lads weren't too keen on going. I was only in there a week or so, and they got drafted to a destroyer.
You seem to have been there, it looks like June the commission came to an end, because you seem to have been in there from June to, yeah, 2 or 3 weeks into July.
And yeah.
So that's just routine and boring.
Yeah.
What about this destroyer? Now, what was that?
The Mackay was an old First World War flotilla leader, a destroyer. Flotilla leader, pretty good really. I was quite pleased when I went on that because it gave me an insight into what life was like in the smaller ships. And of course, running on a peacetime crew, you had plenty of room and there wasn't too much to do, and it was pretty good, really.
Can you compare? A bit early for it, but I mean, this was your first experience of a small ship.
Yeah.
What did you think then? I mean, you later on become a destroyer man, although you've got a battle cruiser.
Yeah.
But I mean, what did you think that the small ship versus big ship? That, because you were a big ship man then.
I was a big ship man.
There was
no continual bugles blowing at you all day. Because most of the on the big ships, and most of the orders are given by bugle, you know, it was falling in and the valley in the morning and work in the main derrick and anything that went on, you had a bugle call for. That was all gone. There wasn't so many people bossing you about, as I might say. You know, you had a petty officer in charge, and that was about it. And he would say at the beginning of the working period, you know, do so and so, and you just got on with it. Nobody bothered you much, and provided you did the thing to the best of your ability. And in fact, the Mackay was engaged as the looking after a flotilla of six submarines, which were stationed at Dundee.
Now, hang on, I'll come back to. So this was, so it was, life was freer and easier.
Oh yes, yes.
But were there, I mean, was it more comfortable on a battleship or was it more comfortable on a destroyer?
On the destroyer, you were responsible for your own messing, and you had a different type of catering on the destroyers. You prepared your own food, although the cook actually cooked it for you. You had to prepare your own food. We were on the battleship, that was all done for you. You didn't have any fresh bread.
Was that good or bad?
It was quite good, really, because you could more or less choose the meals that you wanted, you know.
We'll come back to that. I think we'll talk about food a bit more. What about, some destroyers are cramped? I mean, I know you had less crew on board, but on the Mackay. Was it cramped?
All destroyers were cramped pretty well, you know. All destroyers, there wasn't a lot of room. But on the Mackay, I think out of normally, on the four mess deck, there's 1, 2, 3, about four messes. I think we had 2. So we only had about 50% of the people on board that would be there during wartime when they were fully up to wartime complement, you know.
They can also, I mean, they bob about a bit, and they can be very wet. I don't know whether this was a wet or dry ship, but
The Mackay. Looking after submarines, we spent quite a bit of time in Dundee by the depot ship. And there was a depot ship there with these submarines tied alongside. And we were sort of a mothership to these submarines.
Well, tell us about that. What did that involve? What did you do? I mean, it's a funny thing having a destroyer in command of submarines.
Yeah, yeah. We weren't in command, but when they did exercises and went to sea, we went to sea with them. And they fired dummy torpedoes at us. So we were the ship in
so
which they
target.
Practiced. Yeah, we were the target for them. And we had to look after them to make sure they went down and came up again at the right time.
And you were based at Dundee throughout?
Based at Dundee, yeah.
And anything happened? I mean, you were there from July to August. I mean,
yeah, I was only there a matter of weeks, but I find it to be a most enjoyable time, really.
So even though you were a big ship man, you as soon as you went on a little ship, you
I felt comfortable. Yeah, I felt more at ease. Yes, more at ease.
I mean, was there a control for gunnery control function on I mean, you know, because you were a turret man as well. Right?
Yeah,
you
know. Yeah. When I got to there, I found that they had a fire control director and a rangefinder in a very exposed position, you know, with a canvas screen around it. So I got to be the rangefinder trainer there. It's a good job that we were only with submarines and went to sea in fairly decent weather.
Where was it? I mean, on the ship? On the bridge? Or?
Oh, yeah, above the bridge, yes.
Above the bridge?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So it's on the mast?
No. You had the bridge, then a director, a gun director behind that, and then stuck above that. Was the rangefinder, and I say there it was fairly exposed, really.
And what was your duties as rangefinder trainer? What did you actually do?
The only job that you had really was to, when they sighted the target, you had to train the rangefinder and keep it on the bit of the target that the range taker asked you to keep it on, you know. You can sight better with the rangefinder on different parts of the ship. You want a nice straight bit, you know. Although you might think it would be the mast, well, very often the mast is at an angle. So that's no good for a reconnaissance rangefinder. You take a straight bit, like the front edge of the bridge, or the mainmast might be straight. You can train it on the mainmast. Then you kept it on there while the range taker did his stuff.
So that was your job?
It was a simple enough job, but not easy when your ship is rolling and pitching. And, you know, it's a bit more difficult then. And takes a bit of practice to get into the swing of doing things. Yeah.
Were you happy to be based at Dundee? I mean, it's not Fife, but it's not far from Fife.
Oh, no. No, I was quite happy at Dundee, yes. Got on well with the locals. And, of course, being an ordinary seaman then, I was able to go ashore in the evenings and go to the movies if I wanted and that type of thing. Never used to drink a lot. You know, I'd go for a beer and that sort of thing. But some of the sailors spent most of the time drinking. But I didn't drink to excess. So I spent... most of my short time going to the movies, having a look round. I was a bit keen on dancing. I used to find a local dance hall, and and there was a good thing about that, because wherever you went, there's always a dance hall, and you could always go and get friendly with people, you know.
Mm. Now, why was it such a short posting?
It would probably have lasted a bit longer, but at the end. When did the war start? September. Yeah. At the end of August, the war was imminent, and they recalled all the ships to the depots to be ammunitioned and got ready. for the world, really.
So that would be back to Plymouth?
Back to Plymouth, yeah. Yeah. So back to Plymouth on a Mackay, back into the depot.
And that would be in August?
Yeah, yeah. Now, they were so busy in the depot because while I was in there for the few weeks, while I was in there, I helped to ammunition three different ships. And all now, the working parties were sort of detailed.
Is this while you were still with the Mackay?
No, I left the Mackay.
So why did you leave it when you got to Plymouth then?
Well, we got drafted off. We got drafted off.
The whole crew?
Yeah, everybody got drafted off.
So you were once again in Drake Barracks?
Yeah. And I say, at that time, we spent quite a long time helping to ammunition ships.
Now tell me about that. How did you go about ammunition ships? I mean, what's the process?
I got detailed off the first day to go and help putting some torpedoes onto a submarine. So, quite an involved process, hoisting these torpedoes up, lowering them down into the submarine. And I got down inside this submarine and I looked around it and I thought, well, if this is a submarine, I'm not going to volunteer for these.
Why not? What was so bad about it?
Well, I thought it was a bit claustrophobic, you know, and it was completely strange to me. You know, I'd never seen anything like it, you know. And although the fellas, chaps who were in the submarine service, used to swear by it, used to hate it coming back to general service. I think it was very free and easy, the submarine service. But anyway, I looked round this submarine and I thought, oh, well, I shan't volunteer for one of these, you know. I must have been a bit claustrophobic. Maybe that's why I became a range taker, because it was up in the open air. You know. But then we helped to ammunition, I forget what ship it was, a cruiser. I forget which one it was. We sent down as an ammunition party to a cruiser. And the third one was an aircraft carrier. And they got on this aircraft carrier and helping to ammunition that. And it was quite hard work ammunitioning because it was more or less you had to lift all these boxes of ammunition and carry them, you know. So it was quite hard work. Anyway, I got to this aircraft carrier, stood on the flight of the aircraft carrier on the deck, looked down, saw how far it was from the water, and said, well, I'm not going to volunteer for one of these either. So, man, you didn't have much choice. Submarines you did. A lot of people volunteer for submarines, but more or less, willy-nilly, you were picked for the other ships that you served in. Yeah.
Were you very aware of the approach of war? I mean, this is where...
Yes. I think everybody expected it, even though the headlines in the paper said there wasn't going to be one. We knew something was coming.
Did it worry you?
No. It didn't worry me at all, really.
Did you look forward to it? I mean, you know, some people do.
I can say I looked forward to it, but it didn't worry me. There was a certain amount of anticipation and excitement, you know, among the people in the barracks. About 3 days before the war started, we all had to fall in on the big parade ground, everybody, and we got detailed off for ships, all these ships we'd be ammunitioning and everything, and we got detailed off for the ships. And I got detailed off to join HMS Renown, the battle cruiser.
Now that's a very big ship.
Yes. Yeah.
So this is late August, very late August.
Yeah. Very late August.
It looks like it's the 30th of August. Yes, sorry.
That's right. Just a few days before the war started.
And what were your first impressions of HMS Renown?
Pretty good, really. HMS Renown happened to be at Portsmouth. And, of course, I was in Plymouth Barracks. So I and the other few chaps had been detailed off. It was to make the ships up to the wartime complements, you know. We detailed off for HMS Renown, had to end train and go to Portsmouth. It took ages. By the time they got there, it was late and dark, and we were hungry. And when we got to HMS Renown, they welcomed us aboard, took us up to the big recreation, you had the big recreation space there. Never seen anything like it on any of the other ships they've been on. Big recreation
bigger
space.
Bigger than on Royal Oak.
Oh, yes, yes, much bigger. Very spacious recreation space. And it says, here you are, lads. Hadn't been called lads up to then. Here you are, lads. You can put your hammocks up here. And the regulating staff came round with big kettles of tea. So here we are, some tea, and brought us some sandwiches. So I got a very good impression, especially regulating staff bringing you tea, you know. Never knew anything like it. So very good. And I must say, the time that I did serve on HMS Renown, she was a very, very happy ship indeed.
Well, that's interesting. What is a happy ship? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. People talk about ships being happy and others not being happy.
Yeah.
What made HMS Renown a happy ship? Was it the ship? Was it their officers? Was it the crew? What was it?
I think it was a combination of everything else. Of course, the crew had been aboard for some time. Everybody knew each other. They seemed to be fairly moderate. Lot of chiefs and petty officers seemed to be quite nice chaps. The officers were good. Everything was happy. We didn't seem to have any troublemakers or anything on the ship. The ship's routine was quite good. It was quite a pleasant time on there. Being a big ship, and even though she'd gone up to wartime complement, there was still a fair amount of room, you know. The messes were spacious, and there was plenty of room. The food was good. There's one thing I say about the Renown, the food was excellent, you know. And there wasn't too much, shall I say the word, bullshit. There wasn't too much bullshit, you know. It was quite good, really.
Now, one thing about the Renown is she was a battle cruiser. There were only three in the Royal Navy.
That's right, yeah.
And they'd had trouble at Jutland with battle cruisers. Yeah. And these were... Yeah. Now, the Renown, that they'd been adapted. Were you aware then, before the war broke out, in other words, before anything happened to the Hood, that these ships didn't have enough armour?
Well, I would say no. I would say no. We knew that they were fast. We knew that they still had big guns. But maybe we didn't realise it was because they'd sacrificed the armour on the ship that they were so fast. Because she could do 31 knots, which was quite a speed at sea, you know, especially for the big ship. The old battleships, the Royal Oak, for instance, could manage 18 knots, you know, with a push and a following tide, you know, and rattling in every rivet. Yeah.
But you didn't realise. I mean, can't see armour particularly.
No,
can you,
no. And it didn't actually realise, that it was a problem. We didn't see it as a problem anyway.
Now, after you've been on about 2 or 3 days, I don't know if you're still at Portsmouth, the war broke out. I don't know if there's anything that happened before that, but I mean, I wondered what you thought when. Did you hear the broadcast? What happened? I presume they could play it through the tannoy.
They did. We were actually sailing from Portsmouth up to Rosyth, because they congregated the the fleets that were siphoned scupper flow when the new war was going. And we were actually halfway up the North Sea, to Rosyth when the war did break out, and he did broadcast it.
And what did you think as you heard it and the rest? And you realised you really were at war?
I felt a feeling of excitement, really. Yes, that would be it. And it did. We felt excited, you know. It gave us a bit of a lift, you know. We thought we were a warship, you know. We're going to war. So that was it. So what we went to, up we went to Rosyth. And then up to Scapa Flow.
Now, what was your action stations there? I mean, were you still on the, you know, training, on the rangefinder training?
I was. I was training and under instruction and taking lessons and swocking up to be a control rating.
Now, what was the rangefinder? Where was the range? Was it on a 15-inch gun? Turret rangefinder, or was it on one of the high ones?
No, on one of the higher ones, because they had halfway up the bridge, they had one on each side for the AA control, and HMS Renown had been overhauled and brought up to standard and had new 5.25-inch twin turrets on, so she had 2, 4, 6, 8. She had 8 4.5-inch guns each side, you know, in little turrets, you know, which
4.5
was
4.5 or 5.25?
No, 4.5.
4.5.
4.5-inch twin turrets. Yeah, yeah.
And were they anti-aircraft guns or?
Both.
They're dual
purpose, but they were anti-aircraft guns with a huge elevation on them. You know, they could go straight up nearly.
And these were the guns you were range finding for, not the 15-inch.
Oh, not the no.
Six,
no.
15-inch.
Six. That's correct. Yeah, two A and B turret, which were forward, and one turret down aft, X turret, 6 15-inch guns. Yeah.
Now, what was it like? Was it the same sort of a range finder? Was it any different?
No, not a lot different. Basically, were the same. Some were different in length, you know, but basically it was the same thing, yeah.
And would you be used against anti-aircraft? Would you range, I mean, I'm wondering how you range found it against, I mean, would you try and do it against an aircraft? Or
oh, yes, indeed, yes, yes. You usually picked out the tail, you know, which was had a parallel bit at the back. Some of the Dorniers had the sort of wireless aerial sticking up on the front. Forget whether it was up and down. And that was a handy thing to range on. Find a bit of something straight. Or, at the worst came to the worst, you just tried to superimpose the two images. Yeah, on it. Yeah, it was quite good, really. Yeah. I was quite good at that. Yeah.
Now, so what happened next then? You're on your way to Rosyth. So what happened when you get to Rosyth?
We got to Rosyth. And of course, with the new crew, partly a new crew joining the ship, they had to practice our action stations, bedding down, gunnery exercises, everything out in the North Sea.
So like working up exercises.
Working up exercises, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Were you covered in case of U-boat attack during the exercise? I mean, would you have a destroyer screen?
Oh, usually got destroyed, yeah, yeah.
And anything about the working of exercises?
Not really, apart from the fact there seemed to be a lot of them, and especially nighttime ones. But they used to do these nighttime exercises, and I often wondered before they had radar, it's a wonder there wasn't more accidents. You know, and ships bashing into each other. You know,
what were they like in night exercises? I mean, before radar, it does seem it was quite difficult, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. And there's one or two stories about that, really. Maybe for later on. But
I mean, how could you range at night? Was your range finder in use?
Well, if they had a suspected target, a couple of the guns would fire some star shell, which was a flare on the end of a parachute. And the idea was that you fired the star shell behind the target, they showed the target up, you could range on it and shoot at it and observe you follow shot. Now,
did that work well?
Well, worked after a fashion, about as well as it could really. The thing was, once the first salvo of the guns went off, you couldn't see anything because you were blinded for a bit, you know. The guns with a huge almighty flash, you know, and that was it. And, you know, smoke and everything, and you couldn't see the target then until it cleared a bit. So, nighttime exercises.
How long were you doing that for?
Oh, a couple of weeks. A couple of weeks we did our working up period. Yeah.
Based at Rosyth?
Rosyth and Scapa, yeah.
So between the two?
Between the two, yeah.
So what happened next?
From Scapa, we got sent to Gibraltar to join Admiral Somerville's Force H.
When would that be? October? September?
I'm not sure of the exact date. At the back end of the year, anyway.
After the Royal Oak had been sunk?
After the Royal Oak had been sunk, yeah.
Were you nearby when she was sunk?
No. No.
Now, did you go with her to the Mediterranean?
Oh, yes. Yes, I went with Renown to the Mediterranean.
And November or December? You're not sure?
I'm not quite sure. I can't remember. No.